We are now in our third week. Till now what we have done, we have looked at how information is brought to the brain, how the brain assigns a meaning to it based on our experiences that come to us, how do we learn certain things. Now we are moving to the next step, that is once the information comes to us and we realize that there is a need for us to store it for little longer time for future usage. Okay. Future usage could be say couple of seconds from now, or it could be, you know, even in the lifetime sometime. So future is, you know, quite broad in that sense. So when you realize that I need to store this information for little longer, I can use it in maybe couple of seconds, couple of minutes from now, or I might need this information much later in my life, which is valuable for me, then we try to store it. And if we have successfully stored it, then whenever needed, we will like to retrieve it. Okay. If the process of storage works well, if we succeed, you know, retrieving it from the storage, this is what is called as memory. And in this third week, we would be exclusively focusing on the concepts that has to do with human memory processes. Okay. Now, memory is basically studied in terms of mental processes that are involved in storing and retrieving information. Now, remember, before memory, we have talked about learning. The distinction between the two is that learning basically emphasizes on acquisition, whereas memory basically focuses on the retention and the retrieval of the information. So, if you acquire information, that is what learning looks at. If you are more interested in terms of retaining the information and retrieving it whenever you need it, then this is the part of memory. So, storage, retrieval, these are two important constructs that we would be looking at. Now, memory system, it stores information acquired through our sense modalities. How the sense modalities, they help our brain in terms of perceiving things, that we have already discussed in the first way. Now, these informations which come to the brain might qualify to be stored for relatively longer time, and therefore, memory consists of many systems ranging from storage duration and buffer storage, which primarily will take the information to the long term storage. Okay. So, depending on the fraction of second to lifetime duration of storage, we will further classify memory into different subtypes. That exercise we will continue doing till the end. Therefore, memory basically is our cognitive system, which is used for storing and retrieving the information. Okay. With this basic information about memory, let us understand what actually we are going to do as part of this very discussion, deliberation for this full week. We would be trying to understand what memory is. We would be looking at some of the dominant theories which tries to explain how human storage system works, how the retrieval process works. Then we would be trying to understand that why is it important for human beings to memorize information, why memory plays that important role. And given the fact that memory plays such important role, how many types of retrieval and storage processes are there? One is of course based on the timeline, whether you store the information for few seconds, little longer or much more longer. Okay. Or depending on how you truncate it, you have the information which runs for a certain duration of time, and then depending on certain qualities you truncate it. So, this would lead to all types of storage of information, okay, the strategies that we use. And then we will come to the reverse of memory. Reverse of memory would basically be the process called forgetting. If you commit error in terms of storing information, or you have stored the information, but then you commit an error in terms of retrieving it. Think of something like this. You are searching for a paper that you have filed in your cabinet. Okay? Your filing cabinet has that specific paper that you are searching for, that you are very sure about. But when you search for it, you have all types of problems. Okay? Maybe some people give proper file names where they will put such type of documents. So, they would only look for those file names. Once they find the file name, they will turn the pages and identify the paper. This could be one. The other situation could be that you make a random search, and even in memory we will see that random search actually does not work. Okay. Some people might even go for ordering things, putting things in certain orders, in certain hierarchy. That also works very well. Then you also might file the document based on its relevance, whether you would need it in the coming days, whether you would need it in longer duration, papers which you think are redundant, you will never need it. Depending on your classificatory scheme, you will put the paper accordingly. Same is the story with the memory processes also. Life experiences, all the information that comes to you, depending on several parameters, we try to give it a code, we try to store it, and the coding is needed because the brain understands a particular type of language. Storage, again you need to store it for longer time, and also you need to give it a proper file name, so that when you want to retrieve this information, you can just search for that specific file name and get the information. So, from that perspective, if you look at the memory process, memory has three distinct processes: encoding, storage and retrieval. Now, encoding basically is the process of transformation of a physical stimulus in a form that human memory accepts. Now, if I am looking at the camera right now, okay, there is no certain form, okay, and I perhaps have some idea of what type of function this form performs, and based on this utility or based on this form, I create an impression. Okay? I know that if I see an object like this, what this should be called. I know that if I want a function like this to be performed, what is the instrument that I would need. Okay? So, this is the process of encoding. Storage, of course, is the process of retention. The encoded information has reached the brain, and now that encoded piece of information, the brain will retain it with itself. Remember, storage would require a specific file name. It is just like we save files in our computers. Okay? Say for instance, if I have to deliver a lecture on memory, and if I make a PowerPoint presentation, okay, I might love to give it a name, the file name memory, because this will help me a lot in terms of making search for where exactly is my PPT presentation that I have to use today. If I have say 126 PowerPoint presentations with me, making random search will make my life help. So, how you encode the information, and how precisely, how nicely, how customized the file name you provide to the information that you have stored, that plays a very crucial role. And this crucial role comes into play when you try to recover the information that you have stored. Okay. So, encoding, storage and retrieval are three distinct processes which are of extreme relevance to memory processes. Two models we would discuss. One, the Atkinson and Shiffrin model that was proposed in 1968, which tried to explain memory in a trifurcated format, saying that we have sensory memory, short term memory and long term memory.
Memory starts with a sensory input received from the environment. This input is retained for a very brief time, ranging from 0.25 seconds to 2 seconds. Some of these inputs are attended and rehearsed, such input pass on to short term memory. The unattended inputs are not transferred to short term memory and are forgotten. The inputs can be held in the short term memory for 20 to 30 seconds. If they are further rehearsed, they pass on to long term memory. The unrehearsed ones are forgotten. The inputs moving to the long term memory are organized into categories. They may remain here for days, months, or even lifelong and can be retrieved as and when needed. Decay and interference are some of the factors that lead to loss of information from a long term storage.
Because the Atkinson and Schifrin's model, they talked about the trifurcated structure of memory, okay, just looking at it from a temporal point of view, okay, sensory, short term and long term. Another theory was proposed by Craik and Lockhart in 1972, which further got revised by Telving, and Craik and Telving came forward with a revised version in 1975.
According to this model, the incoming information can be processed at three different levels: perceptual level, structural level, and semantic level. At perceptual level, one becomes aware of the immediate environment. The structural level is somewhat deeper compared to the perceptual level. Here, one emphasizes the structural features of the information. The deepest level of processing is the semantic level. Here, one derives profound meaning of the information. This model explicates that deeper the processing, more is the elaboration. In other words, deeper and meaningful analysis leads to durable memory of the information. Higher the elaboration, more are the chances that the newly derived meaning integrates with the existing memories.
Now you have seen the difference between the two models. The first model, which tried to look at memory in terms of the three types of structures based on its temporal programming. The second model, which was more looking in terms of the elaboration process, okay, whether you look at the information only from a perceptual point of view, or whether you look at the information from a structural point of view, or whether you go for an extensive elaboration, okay, thereby suggesting that the more and more you elaborate, perhaps you understand things better. And if you have more of no semantic meaningfulness driven type of a memory, okay, you will store it better. The third perspective on memory is what is called as the neural network perspective. Now, neural network basically, you know, talks about groups of modules. So it says that there are various modules which form a group, okay. And these modules basically, they help perform simultaneous functions. Memory is nothing according to the neural network perspective, but it is formation or strengthening of these interconnections which gets formed between different modules. Okay. Now, the activation and the spreading, they are the two central components from the neural network perspective related to memory. So, what happens? You get the information from the external environment, you encode the information, okay. You have modules which would be entertaining those encoded information, and once the traces are formed, when you repeat it the second time, it gets strengthened. Okay. Now, two or more modules, they get interconnected. And this formation, if it is repeated, it gets strengthened. When you activate it, okay, you are able to store the information. Okay. Now, more and more is the formation of the module, more and more is the connectivity between different modules, the more spreading takes place. Okay. You have better memory. So, there is a spread of this strengthened associations. The stronger the association, the more wider the network, okay, better would be the memory. And when you activate it, this is how the memory system gets operationalized. This is the neural network perspective. Now that we have discussed three important concepts, the model given by Atkinson and Schifrin, the model given by Craik and Lockhart, which further got revised in collaboration with Telving, and the neural network perspective, if we combine all these information and try to evolve a comprehensive model of memory. So, what is memory all about? How does our memory function? Okay. This is how we would explain it.
This is what you get. If you summarize the existing knowledge on memory system, then our sensory register mostly gets information from the visual, auditory and the haptic senses. The rehearsed information then moves to the short-term memory system. Those encoded and rehearsed further move to the long-term memory system. Depending on our decision to respond to the environment, we use certain retrieval strategies to get the desired information from the long-term storage. The response outputs are mediated by our working memory.
Now, let us go back to our first week. What we discussed there was that visual, kinesthetic, somesthetic, vestibular, auditory, olfactory, okay, all these channels, they are basically meant to provide information to the brain. Given the fact that the brain receives stimulus from all these sensations, okay, one can think that if memory is guided by the information that comes to the brain, then ideally it should store all type of information. Now, let me give you an example. Say, if your mother, for instance, okay, just comes and keeps her palm on your shoulder, without hesitation, within fractions you would arrive at a conclusion that it is my mother. Okay. This recollection, you have not looked at your mother, it is only the touch of the mother which made you make a correct identification that it is your mother. Whereas, if somebody else touches you, you are not able to provide the correct meaning to it. Why? And this gives you a feel that fine, a touch based memory could also exist. Okay. Previously, I was telling you that if I look at a camera and I know this is called camera, okay, the structure, the form, the function both. So, next time if I see this structure, I know this is camera, and if I need something to be recorded, I know which instrument can perform this function, and then I will say I need a camera. Okay. So, it is the visual part, it is the understanding of the mechanism. Now, imagine another situation. You are somewhere close to a railway track, you are not able to see a train, but you hear the sound of a moving train. Just with the help of this auditory input, you can sense, okay, that fine, this the source of this very sound is a moving train, which perhaps is at certain distance from me. Okay. Now, one sound, how does it make you understand that this comes from the train? Again, there must be something that the brain has stored based on the auditory process. Somebody gives you something to taste, you put it on the tip of your tongue and say, oh, I remember there is something else also which resembles to this taste, or this taste is equivalent to something that you and the person with whom you are sharing this experience also is aware of. Then you realize that there could be a taste based memory also. Okay. So, what I am basically trying to tell you is that because the brain receives input from all sense modalities, you can assume situations and you can very easily identify cases from the real world situation, where your own experience will tell you that this part of my memory is basically guided by the input which has come from a given sense modality. Having said this, let me confess that research in psychology has largely been conducted only using two sense modalities, the visual processes and the auditory processes. So, eye and the ear, these are the only two sense modalities through which how the information is captured, how it is processed, how it is stored. Okay. Whole lot of research has gone into it. And the third set of research which is not as comparable as the visually or auditorily guided research in memory, is the touch based memory. Rest of the sense modalities, they have not been examined as thoroughly as the first two and then the third one. Therefore, we will, for our understanding of sensory memory, will focus on only three types of memories. The sensory memory which has to do with vision, that is the iconic memory, sensory memory that has to do with the auditory process, that is the echoic memory, and the sensory memory that has to do with haptic sensation, the touch based sensation. But because largely research has been guided by the iconic and the echoic memory, so for this very module, a 10 hour brief module, we would be talking exclusively with respect to the iconic and the echoic memory. Iconic and echoic memory basically they store visual and auditory information as part of the process involved in perception. So eye and ears both are responsible for the process of perception. They are the first source, the biological entity in our body which receives the signal from the external world. Now both these sense modalities are distinctive because they allow the initial stimulus to be prolonged. This means that when the eyes they get activated because the light falls on the retina, you remember in perception we had said that the cis state converts into the trans state and again gets back to the cis state because it has to be ready enough to receive the second set of signal. Now this very transformation, at the level of retina, the rod cells and the corn cells, the light falls and the cis configuration becomes in the trans state. The time that it will take to get itself back to the cis state is the time which basically the eye gives to its itself to retain the information for a certain period of time. So the visual information, although it has crossed through the optic tract, till this information, till this chemical configuration realigns, the information is stored at the level of eyes. This is iconic memory. Now recollect what we had discussed about the auditory mechanism. What we discussed was that the sound wave, it enters through the middle ear, it goes to the inner ear, where in the cochlea we have the flute and the wall of the cochlea which has the hair follicles. This fluid starts shaking, thereby making movement in the hair follicles. These hair follicles in turn triggers current in the nerve circuit. This neural circuit finally is perceived by the brain, assigned a meaning, and thereby we hear meaningful things in the world. But recollect your other experience of throwing a piece of a stone in a still water, or if you do not have that experience, recollect the experience of collecting water in a bucket that falls from the tap. You close the tap and one or two drops still falls in the bucket, and you realize that the ripples created in the water, it takes certain time for the ripple to settle down. Now convert this to the working mechanism of the ears. The cochlea has the flute shakes. So once the shaking has begun, it will take time to slow down and then gradually get it stabilized. So that would mean that till the fluid in the cochlea moves, the hair follicles will also move, and till the hair follicle moves, ear is capable of retaining the auditory information. And this is the source of echoic memory. So what happens? Eyes and ears both are now capable of storing the information for a shorter period of time to ensure or to allow you the probability of processing this information at a little later stage. And these are the biological foundation of sensory memory. Especially, remember, we are talking only with reference to iconic and echoic memory. Now, iconic memory that has to do with the eyes can hold information for up to 1 to 2 seconds. Okay. Remember, when we will come to the echoic memory, we would realize that ears are able to store information for little longer period of time compared to eyes. Why? That question we will take up when we come to echoic memory. Now, what happens in the case of iconic memory? Shorter period of time, just 1 to 2 seconds, but then you have longer piece of information. 11 to 16 items can be held right at the level of eye for 1 to 2 seconds. You can imagine the capacity of iconic memory. Further, what is far more interesting is to understand the fact that features which are extremely important for us to perceive the world, such as color, such as shape, such as direction. Okay. You remember Muller-Lyer illusion, the example that we took, it had arrow-headed line, feather-headed line, so direction was there. Different lines had different colors, entire Gestalt principle, bubbles that used to come as examples, all of them were colored. So, the shape, color, the direction, all these features can be stored, okay, and 11 such information, 11 to 16 such information can be stored right at the level of eye. What would this mean? This would mean that when you saw examples, whether it was a line, whether it was horizontal, whether it was vertical, whether it was a bubble, whether it expanded, whether it moved in the what you call vertical direction, diagonally, horizontally, okay, everything you could store right at the level of the eye. So, multiple information up to 2 seconds, this is what happens at the level of eyes, and this is called iconic memory. However, our iconic memory has two limitations. First, if you vary the brightness level, okay, once you change the brightness, then you realize that some degree of masking has taken place. Okay. So, right now the level of brightness was this much, you add one more glowing light or you switch off one more light and you realize that the brightness pattern has changed. Because in perception also we have discussed this, based on the balance between white, gray and black, the perceptual quality changes. Okay. Therefore, two information can get masked, okay. It can interfere. So, this is called brightness masking. Similarly, we can have pattern masking. More than one pattern, if it superimposes, one gets overlaid over the other and you get a combined image of the two, this will be called as pattern masking. So, in terms of efficiency, we know 11 to 16 items, color, shape, direction, all such important features for up to 2 seconds. That is the capability of the iconic memory. Limitation, it has its limitation when you tamper the brightness level, and if you vary the pattern, then also it has certain limitations. Okay. With respect to iconic memory, let us also discuss one of the interesting experiments done by Sperling. Now, 3 to 16 alphanumeric characters were displayed for a shorter period of time, okay, and performance in terms of memory was compared under two conditions, the whole report condition and the part report condition. Now, in the whole report condition, recall was basically supposed to be done, okay, with respect to as many information, as many elements of information that was initially presented, okay, how much the participant is able to recollect. Now, irrespective of the characters displayed, it was realized that only 4 to 5 characters were recollected. Okay, this was the whole report condition, where the recall was supposed to be of maximum possible number of elements. What happened in the case of partial reporting condition? In the partial reporting condition, the participant was basically supposed to identify the subset of the character within the visual display, and it was realized that memory was better in this case. So, better memory compared to whole report procedure. Okay. And partial report also suggested that retention is possible for about 12 characters from a 16 character array. So, if this alphanumeric character, there were 16 alphanumeric characters, 12 at least could be recollected in the partial report condition, suggesting that if you are allowed this freedom to go for a partial recall, this is a better condition compared to the whole recall condition. Another interesting information of a research not so very old, conducted in 2010, which tried to modify Spaulding's partial report paradigm technique and tried to find out if iconic memory works in the case of infants also, because whatever we were discussing had to do with adults. Now, in infants, this very study found that even for human children who were just 6 months old, they could also store color related information, okay, and up to 5 items were stored at the level of iconic memory. So, you can visualize that right from a very early stage in our life, iconic memory, vision based memory, which basically serves us for a very brief period of time, not more than 2 seconds time, okay, plays an important role. When we meet tomorrow, we would be talking about echoic memory.